Thank you for listening.
If you'd like to reach us, you can reach us at iqdiscuss@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you and responding.
Hi, I'm Dr. Akiva Down.
And I'm Rabbi Avi Green.
And welcome to Interesting Questions.
In this podcast, we'll be addressing issues that are philosophical, religious, and psychological in nature.
We will be focusing on that which is considered to be controversial, and there may not be a right or wrong answer. So we are hoping that our discussions will yield more questions for your Shabbos table. Hello, and welcome to Interesting Questions, our Thursday edition. Avi, I think I have a great thing for us to talk about. Ein Navi Be'ero, which roughly translates to Chazal saying that, hey, if it's someone who's local, they're not as good as somebody you bring in from far away. And I think I would love for us to discuss about whether or not, A, that is true, which I think it isn't. B, and actually I would very much argue that perhaps our sages who are living in Yerushalayim, or even those who are living in Babylonia at the time, would have been very much upset by that concept of that no one will be potentially good enough if they're local. Because we had a lot of people who were pretty good and pretty local to other really good people. But I think that we hold by that far too aggressively these days. I think that it's one thing to say, well, I'm going to learn something from someone who's from far away because they might do something different or have something to share that I've never heard of. But today with the internet and today with the idea that people move around a heck of a lot more than they ever used to, I think that when we have that philosophy with our tactics of hiring, bringing in experts, bringing in consultants, bringing in people to speak at our local shuls, I think we're really missing out on a lot of local talent. What are your thoughts, Avi?
Well, if we're switching roles, I'm going to quote from Psychology Today, which talks about why we trust doctors more when they wear a white coat, right? And in fact, I'm sure you're familiar with the idea of white coat hypertension and high blood pressure, right? That when, for some people, when a doctor walks into the room, their blood pressure will go up simply because the doctor is present, right? So it's something you have to take into account. Or because they're in the doctor's office. It may not be the doctor themselves.
Usually we just, in actuality, putting on the MD hat and not the other hat, we usually tell people to check their blood pressure outside of the doctor's office because more often than not, they just have hypertension and they should be on treatment.
Okay. But my point is that there are times where we assume someone is a expert or specialist simply because of the way that they present themselves or are dressed. And so, right, if I understand correctly, that's part of why doctors wear white coats, right, to distinguish themselves from other people just randomly walking through the hospital. And I think there is a certain amount of truth in terms of other areas of expertise as well. So sometimes there is the idea that when a community brings an expert from outside, or at least a supposed expert, right, they don't discount them, or perhaps they invest in them more, both because there's a financial investment in them, right? The community has invested in bringing them in. as well as the fact that they're not familiar with them in a way that makes them seem commonplace. And if you're talking about leadership, or if you're talking about expert opinions, I think people don't want, you know, they can be comforted by a neighbor, but they, unless that neighbor is really known as being the worldwide expert, they want somebody who they have been told is an expert in that area, and not the neighbor that they see in their shorts and t-shirt mowing the lawn on Sundays. And so to that end, I think that we find this in many industries where we say if somebody lives locally, they're not going to cut it. We need to bring in an expert from outside in order to justify whatever claim is being made, even if the experts who are local could provide equal, and in some cases possibly even better, support. Now, I think there is also the idea that sometimes you need an outside perspective, right? If someone local is involved in the situation, they may be too close to it. They may be too emotional. But I think that the idea of let's bring someone in from outside simply because it gives it more legitimacy, which, again, has a certain level of legitimacy, but may be overused, especially when it comes to leadership. Now, sometimes you also want to bring in people from outside as guest speakers or as scholars in residence because you need some variety, right? If variety is the spice of life, then you want to bring in some new ideas. You want to bring in some people that are going to suggest things that you haven't heard before. And it's also a way of giving some of the leadership a break, right? Rabbis have to come up with multiple lessons every week. And so the idea of we're going to bring in a guest speaker who's going to speak for a Shabbat or give a guest sermon is a way to both give the rabbi some possibly professional development, but also some new ideas while giving him a little bit of a break as well. And so this idea of you know, bringing in a guest speaker, bringing in somebody to talk from the outside can be very worthwhile. I'm just not sure that when it comes to we can't trust the people on the inside, that we should be as judgmental. Thoughts on that, Akiva?
Well, you know, Avi, I hear what you're saying. I think that there's certainly merit to, again, bringing in outside sources, bringing in more opportunities to hear as much and from who that we can. But you know, I wonder how many, and I'm sure they did, but I'm wondering how many outside rabbinic speakers that the Golden Green Synagogue or Golders Green Synagogue brought in. That was one of the synagogues that Rabbi Lord Jonathan Snacks was the rabbi of. And I bring him up because, you know, we're also blessed in our community to have a wonderful, world-renowned rabbi. At which point, when we did bring in a speaker, at one point, our speaker even said, you know, why are you bringing me in when you have this person you could hear from at any point in time? And I think that there's value to that. I think when I'm considering what we are potentially missing out on just because, hey, you know, they're local, so I've seen them in shorts, and therefore, and I say this in not just from, you know, from the perspective of rabbinical scholars. I say this as somebody who, you know, I went to residency and fellowship up in Boston, and believe it or not, we have a couple of experts up there, and in medicine, not in necessarily other areas that I can speak to. And I think that, you know, some of them, I can say, including mentors of mine, were some of the most humble individuals that you would ever meet, that would sit down on the floor next to you and talk to you like a human being, or you might see in shorts. And yet it didn't diminish the value and the fact that they were extraordinary in their field. And by the way, these are also individuals who would have no hesitancy about hearing from another expert from somewhere else. And so I don't so much think the idea that I have issue with is the idea of hearing from an expert from somewhere else. It's the idea that who I have in my neck of the woods can't possibly be as good as someone who I'm flying in from somewhere else. That's the part that I think I really have quite an issue with.
I think this is something that a lot of lay leaders face, and even professionals in one area can be lay leaders in a different area. And I think that particularly, and I'll speak to my area of expertise, which is education and or rabbinate, in both of those cases, people want someone who is superhuman. They want someone who is, you know, has the vigor of a 30-year-old, but the experience and skills of a 60-year-old. They want somebody who's, you know, learned, but at the same time relatable. They want somebody who is able to be at every simcha and dance the night away, and at the same time sit on the floor and cry with somebody who is mourning. And I think that what gets lost is that rabbis and educators, just like everyone else, are human. And that means they have to sometimes find time for a work-life balance. And that means that they sometimes make mistakes, or they're not as good at one thing as they are at something else. And there are times when you end up with a large enough organization that you can hire people to support your weaknesses. And I believe that, generally speaking, people who have the financial ability and the self-reflection to know what they're not good at may also get coaching or counseling about those areas so that they can improve. But no one is perfect, and no one is going to do everything right. And so people have a tendency, in general, to remember the good, but sometimes to hold on to those mistakes. And so when you only get a snippet of somebody doing what they're best at, when you bring in that scholar in residence, when you bring in that expert, and they don't have to prove that they can do what they're telling you to do, they just get to tell you what it is they think you should do, then it can be very enticing to say, yeah, we can do that. The other thing that unfortunately is true is that I think it's very easy for consultants to simply say, well, the easiest thing for you to do if you're unhappy with the situation is to change the lead. Right? If a team is not doing well, you don't change the team, you change the coach, because the coach sets the culture. So if you're not happy with your culture, then change the coach. And there is some truth to that. But on the other hand, what they sometimes forget is when they change the coach, when they change the leader, the new leader is going to come with certain faults as well. And what I see certainly in educational circles all the time is that they will often hire someone who has strengths where the previous person had weaknesses, because they're trying to shore those up. But that can often lead to the places where that person who's leaving had strengths not being covered or not being done as well because the new person doesn't have those strengths. And so it's one of those things to think about in terms of when you're investing in a shul rabbi, educational leader, does it make sense to invest in a person recognizing that they are human and that they will do some things well and other things not? And when you find something that they're not doing well, you need to support them with coaching and or other personnel who can do that? Or do you say, well, maybe it's time to change things up again? Thoughts, Akiva?
It's a point well taken. It's something that is, and I can say this, by the way, as somebody in a different set of fields. It's not unique to any one field, I think. It's definitely something we see all across the board. At the same time, you know, I think that we have something that's been really well established as a positive, at least I think a positive in medicine, which is the idea of a second opinion. You know, you give a second opinion, oh, well, and I had a mentor, supervisor, share one time that don't be afraid of a second opinion. Because it's a wonderful thing. Either you find out that someone else has an idea that you didn't, and therefore maybe it's better news, or maybe you missed something and they caught it, or you have someone who agrees with you. So you know that another good brain has said, hey, this is what it looks like. And either way, it's a positive. I suppose the only time when it doesn't become a positive is when you get multiple, which is why they're no longer a second opinion when it's multiple opinions, because that can, of course, get confusing if one is just looking for what they want to hear. But suffice it to say, I think that there's certainly an important mechanism to take into account that sometimes, yeah, you just need to work on the areas of weakness rather than saying, oh, well, let's just find someone different who can satisfy those areas of weakness without taking into account that they themselves have their own areas of weakness. It's certainly a mistake to think that anyone is superhuman or perfect. But I do think that there's value, getting back to kind of the other piece that we were talking about, that there's value to what someone brings, especially being a member of that particular community, being someone who is able to say, hey, I know what the politics are here, or I know what the local beliefs are, I know what people say they want, I know what people say they like and what they don't like. And I think that all too often we're very quick to dismiss that because, well, we daven next to them, or we've seen them drop their kids off at school, so therefore, you know, it's kind of one of those things where we don't want to take for granted what we're blessed to have in our own communities either. So now here's something to discuss for either if you have more time around your Shabbos table, or perhaps you're having another meal like a lunch on Shabbos, which that would be maybe talk about a time where you didn't realize what you had in your own community. Maybe you didn't realize it until you moved to another community, or maybe you didn't realize it until your community brought in someone different. But I think it's a good opportunity to consider, what do we have where we live so that we can be a little bit more grateful and appreciative of what we've got?